should I stop it and start
no,
over?
No,
and
then nah, we, I can and, just cut all this out.
And it's then easier. We clap and then...
Yeah, no, we're good.
No, we should do an experiment to see if we were actually good at clapping.
Okay, that's
Let's
good.
Let's see if
that's
we can clap at the same time. We can prove to everybody, if it didn't sound good, that we're not white guys in church. We actually know how to clap on
three. All right.
Three, two, one, clap. You see, all right, it's one spike, not two. We have, like, scientific proof.
Yeah,
we clap on count pretty much.
Yeah, so I'm blaming technology and Zoom and digital media, which is the problem, which I think is also why our horns are so off time.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if we did it now, it would be, you know,
I actually did get a comment on the Bucks game clip that our horns are getting better synced.
Nice.
And I think that's true. I think our horns were better synced.
Yeah.
I think it's because I think I actually edited them more in sync rather than Zoom was at all helpful.
Yeah.
but for people, welcome. This is an unorthodox introduction because... No, it doesn't matter if it is. We have our guest this week. Our guest this week is Marshall, the official mini pincher of City Saint Country Saint. I am Charles Starr. I am sitting here with
Elron Mexico.
We are here in Louisiana together, getting ready to go to the critical final game of the season against the Atlanta Falcons, and we are getting ourselves hyped. We are preparing for the game, and so I ask the question I ask every week, Ron, how are you feeling?
Amazing. We can't lose. Everything's going to go right. It's all in the stars. It's all in the cards.
That's right. Yeah. It's how it feels. Yeah. It feels good. It feels good. We've had a good couple of days down here just hanging out, and we're ready to hit the city and watch the Saints go to work. And I don't know, it feels right to be positive, because I don't think we'd enjoy the day if we went in negative. And so we're feeling positive. We're going to head into the city. I am wearing a Kamara jersey, and I am the only one. Because it looks like they brought Jordan Mims up from the practice squad. We haven't seen him since, I think, the third week of the preseason. And so he's going to be backing up Jamal and Kendre, because I think Kendre is playing.
Yeah, I hope so. We haven't seen him in forever.
Yeah.
I think he's good from what I remember. Like, he had some flashes that he had talent.
Yeah, he's good in space. He's like one of those guys who is like rookie year Kamara, who they were using in space. And I don't know how good he is up the middle. Hopefully Jamal will be our Ingram busting stuff up the middle. And also, Peyton Turner is actually playing today, which, you know, I hear that they spent some time this week reminding him of the rules of football.
he had to jog his memory.
You know?
Yeah.
All right, you know, like pointing at a picture with like a... quarterback on it and being like bad man.
Get him.
Yeah. So hopefully that'll work out. Yeah. But, you know, last week looked good, and it makes me feel good about this week.
Yeah. I feel like our defense is really going to come out and play, because they've shown a lot of we don't have Lattimore again. And like you said, we don't have Kamara. But I'm wearing a Deuce jersey, so if need be, maybe he'll come out of the play by play thing.
And we might need that would be nice. Yeah. That would be nice. It's is that Bobby Hebert's music? And so the other games we care about, we got a scoreboard watch Tampa Carolina.
Yeah.
And I feel better about that game than I probably should.
You keep talking about Baker's ribs.
I keep talking about Baker's ribs like as if it's the eighth day and Adam is still sore for making Eve. He had a day of rest, but it wasn't enough.
It wasn't. No, he actually had the procedure, and now Baker can... So congrats to him for that.
Yeah, yeah. He's too, just, he hasn't been monitoring the playbook.
He can't look up. Like, we've only seen the top of his head since the operation.
So I'm hoping that Tampa is off. I'm hoping that Carolina, like they did at Atlanta, feels that they have some pride to play for, that people feel that they have contracts to play for, and they come out with menace in their hearts. I'm trying to remember the other two games because I didn't open up anything.
It's,
one of them is, I know Chicago is playing Green Bay, right?
Yeah, and then Seattle and Arizona.
Arizona, good.
So we need both of those.
We need both of those if Carolina lets us down.
And both of those are like underdog. We have to
root for them. Yeah, not huge underdogs. I mean, Chicago really turned their season around. They've won like 5 of their last 6 or something like that.
I'm sure our Chicago friends that we well. You think they are happy or they like feel like... I was wondering about that the other day. Like, this is fake. This is fool's gold.
You know, I think since they have Carolina's pick, They're probably happy to see Chicago winning.
Yeah.
Like usually you would think a team like that would want to be circling the drain just so they get that pick. Yeah. But they get Carolina's one, and so maybe they're like, hell with it. We can go from 4-12. Mm-hmm. Let's get that 12, you know, and let's make Green Bay hurt.
Yeah.
They're probably feeling all right, especially since if Fields has a, you know, they want to believe that Fields is their guy and they don't need to get a quarterback in the draft. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping Chicago can come through. I think Arizona's been better now.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray is back. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, the New York Times has this tool which plays like a bunch of simulations for every scenario. And right now, as we sit here, it says that the Saints are like somewhere in the 30s, like around 35% to make the playoffs.
Okay, that's what the AI is giving us.
That's what the AI is giving us.
Singularity says.
That's because we have to win today. And if you assume that the Saints beat Atlanta, it says we're more like a 57% chance.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I get... Because I feel like that's... We're going to beat Atlanta. Like, 100%.
Right.
Like, I'm not even...
And so... So, the second... So, if we control the part that we can control...
Yeah.
Which I say we, because I am going to be loud enough to distract Mike Williams. If we control what we can control, we're a slight favorite, which basically just means... We get to watch without pessimism.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like a good coin flip. We're like, we have casino odds at that
point.
That's right. Yeah. Like,
that's right.
We're the dealer now at the table. You
that's
know?
Correct.
The that's other correct. Teams are the schmucks who rolled into the casino with a dream, you know?
That's right.
We're in charge. We're in charge.
House always wins.
Yeah,
the house always wins in the long run. Unfortunately, we only get one iteration.
they get one roulette
spin. We need to run it a million times. We got to ask the guys in Seattle and Green Bay if they'll agree. But we got to control what we can control. That said, we are getting ready for the game. We are psyched. And we are going to go to the game with the horns.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Ron?
I'm ready.
Marshall, are you ready?
Can you help us with this?
We'll see what Marshall does. He's chewing an antler.
Yeah.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Let's go to the game, folks. Who dat?
Who dat? Right.
One of the funny things about us recording on the same mic is you can't get rid of background noise because it's all like
it's
usually
all one thing.
Marshall does something, I can mute it if he does it while I'm talking. Mm. And he just kept dropping that antler. And so you hear the clatter like 3 or 4 times in the intro, which is, it's just funny, and I don't care, you know.
Yeah, it's good. He's learned how to throw it now. Like, he puts it in his mouth, and he does that and lets it go, and then he'll shoot it at me. Like, you throwing stuff now. Yeah.
Nice.
He's a talented dog, you know.
He is. He's a very talented dog. I was very happy to meet him. Meeting Marshall in a weekend of highlights.
Yeah.
Meeting a very happy Marshall was definitely way up there on the list.
Yeah. You guys got along right away. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Marshall knew I was a good guy, and I could immediately sense that Marshall was an excellent dog.
Yeah.
And so that was great. I think everyone can sort of sense how good the weekend was just in my voice, which feels like I can only talk in really low registers now because my vocal cords are so fucked up that I think it improves my voice dramatically. I think this is a voice that if I weren't married, I could actually make some moves with.
You got the James Earl Jones thing going or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could just move in sexy silence through a room of blind women.
You could be like Isaac Hayes. Well, he's dead now, yeah, so there's a vacuum. There's an Isaac Hayes vacuum in the world. And all you have to do is go get season tickets, come down here, and then there you go. And we'll, yeah. And I was hoarse. Like, I remember, like we were going down the ramp in the dome, and like my voice was like cracking. It was like I was going through puberty or something, you know?
Mine seemed fine until I slept Sunday night, and then I woke up Monday morning with my throat in open revolt against me. but it was great. I mean, look, it was great getting down and meeting everyone in the bayou. I met the extended L. Ron community, and I got to almost go fishing and crabbing. I think we may have talked about that on the intro, but, we were doing some out-of-season attempts at conquering nature, and nature said no.
No, but we got to look at nature. We got to be out there. We went through the simulation of it, yeah.
That's right. Nature wins.
Yeah, nature won. Jean-Charles Zero. Yeah.
That's right. And so, but it was great. And then we got to go to Mother's the morning of the game, which is one of my favorite restaurants anywhere, but it is in New Orleans, so I got to go. It's not only a breakfast spot, but for me, it usually fits into my day as a breakfast spot, hitting it right on Poydras.
Yeah, that was delicious. I like the people, the famous people's pictures on the walls, and like everybody's in a suit, and like, you know, you can, it's like their professional like headshot, except Van Damme. He's like in his, I think that's Universal Soldier uniform. He looks like a cyborg or something.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
and then he has that sign. I'm like, it's so bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of people. I didn't take pictures, and now my brain is melting, so I don't remember everyone who we were under, but it was like, recognize the whole wall in the little corner of the restaurant where we were sitting. And then it was a perfect day for a 20-minute walk to the stadium up Poydras with a crowd of people all going to the stadium. Mm-hmm. It was lit, man.
Yeah.
Like, the walk was wild. There was a small drum line in the street. There was a larger marching band, which you heard before this section. That was just me recording Poydras as we walked up.
Can you imagine how cool it is for like, so I don't know if he still does it, but like Kamara used to walk to the games like from the quarter. I don't know. I forgot exactly where in the city he stayed from. I don't think he stayed in the quarter, but somewhere, maybe in the warehouse district. I'm not sure, but like he would kind of do the same walk we did, but to the game, like to go to work early. And like, from what I remember it, like he'd start walking, like he'd have like a crowd of like 20 people around him. You know what I mean? Like walking into the dome, you know, like
jogging Rocky.
Yes, yes. That's how he's a man of the city, but we cannot lose him.
He's too important. I know. Yeah. It was disappointing that he couldn't play.
Yeah.
though in actual game terms, Kendre had a great game, but we'll get to that later. But, you know, what time does... But he's got to show... Like, it's...
He's the early. Games,
he's got to be getting to the stadium between, what, 9 and 10, right? Yeah.
But people are still out there tailgating at all the parking lots. I mean, they're out there cooking. Yeah, they got the RVs. Like, it's a party already. All those bars are open already. Like, I guarantee you, mothers was probably jumping from, like, you know, like from 8 o'clock, you know? Like, yeah, it's still pretty lit out there, you know?
I don't know how you go in to that without your energy level peaking, you know? Yeah. Like, I was, as kickoff approached, I literally thought I was going to die. Yeah. Like, my heart was really, really racing. And I am right in that kind of zone of attention to my own weight where I'm like, this could be it. You know, like Fred Sanford, you know, I'm coming.
Meet you. That's the way to go out, though, man. I mean, I don't know what I'd tell your family, you know, but like, but
he died doing what he loved, Gary. Doing what he loved. But the energy was incredible. It really was. I mean, the stadium. I don't know. People were saying that, like, aftermarket sales were slow, but the stadium was hot. It was loud. You know, everyone was ready for it. You know, people went in. I think, I'm not going to take credit, but I think, you know, people shared our willingness to be optimistic about the day.
Yeah.
Like, an entire stadium of people who were like, let's do this. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's the Falcons. They always going to get up, I think. You know, like, we just got to beat. If we just win this, it's good, you know? So.
Yeah, and it was, there were plenty of, you know, red. I mean, it's funny, in front of us, in line at Mother's, there was a table of four, and it was two Saints fans and two Falcons fans.
Yeah.
And the guy seating people was like, oh, a house divided.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was all kind of, like, semi-respectful. They were fun. You know, the Falcons scored a couple of early touchdowns, and, you know, you could see that you could kind of feel it maybe going a little pear-shaped.
Yeah.
And the Falcons fans were loud when it happened. You know, you really get a sense that the cities aren't that far away and that people can travel. But it never seemed like anyone was rowdy or shit was going to get out of pocket.
Yeah. It's never like, it's like there's a lot of love between. I mean, there's like, they're our biggest rivals, but like I've never seen them get like mean or anything. Like, in there's like, everybody's still kind of hug at the end of the day and be like, all right, that the game was what it was. It was fun. And from what I understand, we get the same treatment when we go there. Like, it's, there's a lot of love between the two cities for sure. I'd love to go to an away game in Atlanta and experience what that's like, you know?
Yeah.
That's the one away game I'd like to see, yeah.
I don't think this is actually in the interview with Chris, because we've got our man in the dome coming up later. But it was palpable that when I go to games in, whether it's Jets or Giants, the games are in suburban Jersey, and it is just a really white crowd for whatever overdetermined reasons that is. And a game between New Orleans and Atlanta is not that.
No.
You know, like, it is not that. That was not a white crowd at all. Yeah. And it was such a great experience being in the dome. You know, I loved it so much.
Yeah. It's so much of the city, and I can see why, you know, you can see why Skooks talks about, like, the importance of that building, you know, and like them, and when we talk about the importance of the city and how it interacts with that, and to have it, like, kind of, like, waste on a motherfucker like Dennis Allen. Like, we don't even get to that later, but, yeah, it's, like, it's so good. Like, we you know, like, we'll get to that later, but.
But I think it's appropriate now. I mean, people. I saw someone tweet about this, that, like, when Dennis Allen talks about culture change, it feels like he means it, and he may not, right? It's plausibly unfair to him But it doesn't seem unfair that the culture change feels like a culture change from Jameis and Kamara and the linemen playing loud music and dancing in the locker to Derek Carr turning his chair backwards to tell you about Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Totally. It is like, it's obvious from, like, you know, just being there on the ground, you know, in the dome with the fans, walking around the city, like, and most importantly, watching this team play. Like, DA is not a saint. He's not part of this. You know, like, he doesn't have the heart to be that. Like, he's just not that guy. I don't think he could ever be part of the city, not like, or part of this team in the way that it will ever connect, excite, or like inspire the fans or the players. Like, I guess we're not Indianapolis, you know what I'm saying? It's not a city like that.
Yeah.
It's like, even if we was winning, and maybe it's better we not winning, like really winning, because like, I don't think he's the guy for this. I think it's time to like really, I don't know if management's going to do something about it, upper management, but like.
I get the sense not. I mean, one of the things that we know about coaching firings is people like to get it done literally as soon as they can, so they can start going after replacements.
Yeah.
And if Dennis Allen hasn't been fired yet, when Vrabel was fired and Smith was fired, and who else? I feel like other people have gotten chopped. Rivera was fired. I don't even think those are the only three, but those are the three that come to mind. You know, in Chicago, everyone is on, like, pins and needles because they think Eberflus should be fired. And they expected him to be, and he sort of hasn't been. Yeah. Though the back half of his season was actually not bad at all. But I don't know. I haven't been following them closely enough. So, if they wanted to replace him, I think that gets done already. But I think Loomis likes Allen, and Allen likes Carr. And, like, the whispers I'm hearing is that, you know, Carmichael is dead man walking, and, you know, Gruden may come in as the offensive guy. And it's like, are we really trying to rebuild a Raiders team that didn't fucking do anything?
It seems like that. Like, that is terrible. That is like, I hate, like, you could tell a lot about a person by, like, who they apologize and suck up to, and who they organize and build power with. And, like, DA, like, he sucks up to ownership and, like, even other members of the managerial class, like, how he apologized to, like, the Falcons, you know, a coach, you know, while throwing his own guys in the bus. Like, he can't build like
this one. I do want to hold for the end.
Okay,
we'll use that as a preview.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah,
because it's true. We'll use that as a preview because I want to talk about that a lot. But I think we talked about having this episode be kind of a day in the life of the podcasters. And so we'll go through the game in sequence, which I guess takes us to the first quarter.
Yeah.
How did you feel coming off the first drive? Right. We get one first down and then it stalls out.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Like, I've seen that before. Like, I still felt like God was with us. Like, God was with Jameis. We were Jameis. You know what I mean? Like, but then when they scored that, the big play we gave up after that, right? Then it was like, I still felt all right. I was a little like, it took a little bit of the air out of it, but I was like, there's still so much football left. And I could tell it was going to be exciting. I could tell we wasn't going to get really blown out. Even when it looked kind of scary at the beginning, I knew he wasn't getting blown out, you know?
Yeah. I was a little more nervous than that. I mean, we had the start, right? Yeah. You know, it's touchback, but they start with a pass to Taysom. Good. Get Taysom involved, because it felt like we've been getting away from him.
Yeah.
We got a first down. We got 5 yards, but then we got stuffed and Carr got sacked and fumbled, though we recovered it. And I was like, damn it.
Yeah.
That's like a bad way for it to end. We punt, which was, you know, decent, you know, out of bounds at the 21. Fine. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But the pass to Miller was like a 56-yard pass.
Yeah.
On 3rd and 5, where Miller was all alone.
Wow.
And I've watched that replay a couple of times, and it's like they put him in motion and it fucked our coverage up and nobody picked him up. right? Everyone else was manned up on someone else. Nobody followed Miller. He was all by himself 20 yards downfield. And the only good thing was that Howden ran him down like the Terminator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A wide receiver in open space, and we had a rookie safety just haul ass and drag him down. So it's like, okay, saving grace on the play. Mm-hmm. They end up getting a touchdown, which, you know, was just one of those annoying plays where we flush the quarterback, but it doesn't do us any good.
Yeah.
You know, that was like a bad start.
Mm-hmm.
But redeemed pretty fast because we flew downfield,
mm-hmm.
you know. We had like 3.5 minutes of game time, and we had tied it up by just sort of methodically picking them apart. And so I can't complain about that.
That's when I felt like, all right, this might be like a really high scoring game. Like, this is going to be exciting. This is going to be like 30s, 40s. Who knows where it's going to go here. When the ball was in the air to Miller, like, I thought, before he even caught, because where were you? That's why I love being in the games, because, like, you can see who's behind who in the stadium. Like, you don't have to wait. Is there a safety back there when you're watching it on TV? Like,
right.
I see the ball in the air. I'm like, and I see nobody. I'm like, oh, man, that's touchdown. They got us. And like you said, Howden runs them down. But after that, like, it just had, it had that vibe. This was going to be a crazy high-scoring game. But then, like, our defense started playing a little better. It felt like every possession. And our offense played a little bit better every possession. And I was like, oh, man, we just, we got it moving.
It wasn't immediate, right? Because we tie it. And then on the second play, Bijan gets a 71-yard touchdown pass. And at the game, before I get to that, I have to say, on that drive, our touchdown drive, 3-for-3 pass completions, and our run game was all positive. And then, you know, he hits this great pass to A.T. Perry, who is looking, I honestly think he's going to be just an incredible sixth-round steal.
Yeah.
Because he's fast, and he's like 6'4", and he just, he didn't get it called, but he just shoved the safety down to catch that fade. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even think it was interference, but he, like, made the space, and the guy fell out of the way, and it was just a nice ball and a good catch. But then immediately they take the lead again because Bijan Robinson catches this pass in the flat and there's nobody behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And at the game, we were like screaming at Alante Taylor because it looked like he got lost in space.
Yeah.
But I watched that replay too and he got picked.
Okay.
You know,
like
he got picked by a crossing receiver, which is, you know, great play design. It's your job to avoid the pick, but you know, the offense is doing it on purpose. Credit to them. They pick him. He's off balance, and nobody's going to be sure.
I thought he just took the wrong angle in the game. I thought he went for the pick or something.
Right.
That's what it looked like on the field. Yeah.
Same. Yeah. That's exactly what it looked like in real time. It even looked like that on the replay. But, you know, needless to say, I watched these highlights 800 times. Because I knew how good they would be.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh no, they just clipped him and knocked him off balance, and he wasn't able to recover to the point where not only could Robinson catch the pass, but he was just way clear of Taylor by the time he had his footing back.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone else was out of position. But we are nevertheless down 14-7. But we just ripped it up again. Mm-hmm. We just had another really solid, methodical drive.
Mm-hmm.
Leading to Kendre Miller looking like
LeSean McCoy. He looks
saying shady.
He runs like that. He runs like he's got that, like, he's always like a drill burning in the ground going one way or the other. Like, you know, he's gonna be good. I think I was a little like skeptical about him in the early parts of the season. Even in preseason, I wasn't like sold on him, but like I'm starting to really come around on him a lot.
He had a weird year because he looked like shit the first few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to blame him because Trevor Penning was on the line.
Yeah.
Our offensive line as a whole was not playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looked like a guy that would get hit, like, who didn't have the burst, who would get hit at the line and go down. And in retrospect, I think he just kept running into a wall because our line wasn't doing anything for him.
Yeah.
Because Sunday, he looked elusive. He looked like he really had burst. He didn't really run like Kamara. Because I think of Miller as cutting a lot. Whereas I always thought of Kamara as having jelly legs, where he would get hit, absorb the impact, and spin off it or just maintain balance in some insane way. Whereas Miller is like dancing between raindrops and not letting people touch him. And that's what he did, you know, on second and three. The hole that he was supposed to run to just disappeared. And he cut back and found some crack in the line and just wriggled his way to falling backwards as he reached the ball back and just barely got the ball across the line before his elbow hit the ground. Beautiful play. Nice.
Yeah. I'm excited. I can't. Can you imagine a backfield next year with him and AK? Like, that's going to be, oh, man. And then plus plus A.T. Perry, Olave, you know, like Shaheed. And if Carr's playing average, and Carr seems like the kind of, like, as the, like you said, as the line gets better, he gets better. And that's the mark of an average quarterback, right? But that's fine. Like, we could, with an if he wants to be average, or if Carr can be as good as our line and our line can be great, then that means maybe Carr can be great, you know?
Right.
So with these weapons, man, it's, I'm really excited for it, you know, but except for the coaching, you know, we'll get to that, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Though, I mean, that almost felt like it improved too. And it's, you know, the same drum we've been beating. I don't think we're alone in it. You have to be willing to use the middle of the field. Because if you use the middle of the field, then the defense has to cover the middle of the field. And we started running Johnson and Shaheed and Olave on routes that took them across the middle and fucked things up for their linebackers. And it makes them go into coverage instead of harassing Carr. And all of that, I think, helped our offense a lot. And our guys run slants and seam routes well. Yeah. They catch those balls if you put it on them.
Yeah.
And so that's what it was. So now it's early in the second quarter, and we're tied at 14. And, you know, bounces kind of back and forth. We force a couple of, is it three and outs? Yeah, three and out, and then three and out. Right? Time of possession numbers at this point are comical because the game is tied, but they have 2 3 and outs and 2 touchdown drives that took under a minute. And we have like these 2 slow, you know, drip touchdown drives that take like 5 or 6 minutes each. But we come to the 2 minute warning. And we get it into, you know, all the way, you know, a little disappointing that we got first and goal and then kind of farted, or first and 10 from the 11, and then kind of farted it away by getting, we get the field goal with like a minute left, and then scared me a little by letting, after going 3 and out twice, letting Atlanta tie it at the whistle on, on, you know, a 30-yard field goal, which is not great.
But I was still excited. I was like, man, this is going to be a fun one. Like, this is, you know, this is shaping up to be something, you know?
Yeah, oh, I was pumped. I definitely felt like we were, like, really playing. By halftime, playing really well. It felt good going into the half, and I think we both felt good, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Then we went hang out with Chris for a second, got his take on it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we are here at halftime. It is 17-17. We have met up with an old friend, Chris, our man in the dome, who I think was with us in week, I don't remember. It's too early in the season. But Chris, do you share our positive energy going into the second half? This is a very long delay.
I have to, yes and no. Because I kind of feel like if Tampa wins, the Saints will win. But I feel like if Carolina wins, the Saints will lose. Just because it's typical Saints stuff.
Yeah. This is Murphy's Law in action. I get it. I get it. You know what? I need someone to temper my enthusiasm.
I don't know if the offense is playing well enough. I don't know. And the defense not getting enough pressure.
Yeah, so that's what we said. Defense,
but the offense isn't playing how it should be playing. I think the offense could be playing better. It should have more points.
Yeah.
I think there are enough points on the board.
Well, look, I can't say I have a problem with the offense. The last three drives were touchdown, touchdown, field goal. But you are right. The defensive line hasn't even shaken Ritter's hand, and they should be driving him into the dirt. So that's no good.
Yeah.
But we gotta just—we're gonna do a quick man in the dome and just sign off with a who dat. Can you give me a who dat either way?
Who dat?
There we go. Man in the dome.
Man in the dome.
So there we are, 7-17 at the half. We have our various opinions, right? You know, yeah. You heard me talking with Chris. Sorry, it felt like I froze Ron out of that conversation, but the fact is we were both screaming into my phone in a crowded stadium. It wasn't really a great environment for full participation.
Yeah.
And then the second half started with a bang. I mean, did you get to see the play?
Which one? Yeah. We were walking back, and I was watching it through the glass, looking at the field, and all I saw was him just catch the ball, and then everybody went insane, you know, like Alante. I just saw the pick. And then I think I met up with you right after that. You were coming back, right?
Yeah. I, like finding Chris and interviewing him and then making sure I took a personal break before the second half started, the line was a little long and I ended up missing the first few plays. Mm-hmm. And I thought at first, based on what my sense of time, you know, I saw the Saints turnover celebration. I didn't know what happened, but I saw everyone running to the end zone, you know, to vamp and flex for the cameras. And so I assumed, because I didn't know how much I'd missed, I thought that we had forced a fumble on the kickoff. You know, I couldn't see who it was. Yeah. All I knew was everyone was running. And then I got to see the replay of Alante just stepping in front of a pass that, after watching that play a bunch of times, I still don't know who Ritter was throwing to.
Yeah.
Because he hit Taylor between the numbers.
He was throwing to Taylor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a nice catch.
Felt like that's what we needed to wait for with Desmond Ritter, that he would do it once.
Yeah.
And, well, it says, according to the game book, it says it was intended for Kyle Pitts. So I'll take their word for it. But he caught it and ran it back, you know, to the 25. And, you know, we're in business, man.
Yeah.
Because we get, you know, there was like one running play. And I don't want to say fortunately, but the good news is that he wasn't like actually hurt. But, you know, a couple of guys. Oh, no, he was out. Calais Campbell and Caden Ellis both got hurt on the play after the pick.
Mm-hmm.
Caden Ellis, former Saint, he killed us in the first half.
Yeah.
Caden Ellis was everywhere, but he hurt his knee on that play, which gave us enough time to get back to our seats for the play of the century, which was the Olave touchdown.
Yeah. That was so
which,
cool.
If you... I can't imagine anyone who is listening to this podcast who hasn't watched that play yet.
Mm.
But if you haven't watched that play yet, that play should be a halftime show.
He was like tapping it to him. It was almost like if the Harlem Globetrotters was like doing a receive. You know what I mean? Like he was just the way circus catch kind of thing. And I was just worried he got his. I was like, did his feet get in by the time he had control? You know.
And then, right, live, it was impossible to see.
Mm-hmm.
Right, And can you imagine being the cornerback on that play? The coverage was great. And the only thing you know is that the ball popped out of his hands. You did your job. Yeah. Or you think you did your job, but it bounced. He tapped it with his right hand, grabbed it with both hands, and then just held it aloft like the Statue of Liberty, which is like a very NFL receiver thing to do because you've got like these oven mitts.
Yeah.
On, you know, at the end of your arms. And so he just holds this out. And when you look at the replay, he's a step inside the line. So it's not like he was worried about the sideline. Right. And he took like three steps running with the ball. He knew he had it firm.
Yeah.
Just, you know, ran right to, I think it was Shahid. And, you know, the two of them started dancing.
Yeah, that was an amazing catch. We got a great view of that. That was like, you know, like on our side, the you know, that was on our end zone, kind of like, so we were sitting. It was,
Yeah, we were sitting at just, we were sitting in the lower bowl right on the 20.
Yeah.
And so that, the line of scrimmage was basically, we were looking straight at it. Olave was in the far side of the end zone, but unobstructed view. Just to watch that ball bounce around and him and his teammates go nuts. And, oh, I, like, the feeling was just so good to take the lead back that quickly.
Yeah. It really felt like we were going to win after that. Like, all right, we, you know, we doing it now. And it's, yeah, it seemed like the defense was just kind of like, they knew, you know, like they knew the Falcons were good for like probably one or two turnovers on their own without us even really trying to do something too tricky to them, you know, trying to get too cute with it. You know, you can tell they just played like, we're just going to play our defense, not get too, try to confuse them too much, because they're just on their own is going to screw it up. And they did, you know, twice at least. Yeah. Two or three. How many turnovers we got? At least the two picks.
Two picks in the bad snap, I think.
Yeah, so that's three. That's three. Yeah, two so picks like in the that was really all on them. You know, thank goodness we were playing the Falcons. But we win that even without that. I think, you know what I mean. Even if they played a, you know, a turnoverless game, we still win that game.
I think so. I mean, you know, you could see from the drives. I mean, we follow up that touchdown with another three and out. Kind of a dubious play call. I mean, I get that they're going for broke because it's going to be a high-scoring game. But they had back-to-back runs that left them with third and one. And they decided to take a deep shot. And Adebo knocked it away, I think. And so they had to punt and flash score again. You know, we score in... What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, five plays.
Yeah.
Right? He found Shahid wide open in the end zone. And even that was like not his best throw, but Shahid was so clear that he had time to wait for it in the end zone and make that catch. And so now we're up two touchdowns halfway through the third quarter, and our defense has three and outs on three of the last four drives. That's when I felt good.
And it's crazy. This is like midway through third quarter. And if you'd have asked me how much like real time went by, it felt like maybe like half hour, 40 minutes. You know what I mean? This game was flying by. It was like a blur.
3 hours and 2 minutes.
That's a quick game.
And then we closed the quarter by stuffing them, you know, goal line stand, you know? They got it down to the 10, Cordarrelle Patterson with a 7-yard run, and then, you know, tackled at the 1, stuffed for a loss, incomplete. Mm-hmm. That's it, our ball, man, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, we get the ball back for the fourth quarter with a 2-touchdown lead, you know, and I remember you looked at me and you were like, 99-yard drive. That's it. Nail in the coffin, 99-yard drive. Didn't quite happen, but we did get a field goal, right?
We got
it down to the 6, you know? We made it almost all the way there. And what was really funny is there was a guy sitting in front of us who lost his mind that the third and three pass from the six was incomplete, you know.
Yeah. he wouldn't shut up about it.
He was so mad. We're up by two touchdowns. We kick a field goal to go up by 17, and he's still ranting about how Derek Carr missed an open receiver that I am telling you, Derek Carr rolled right, and the receiver that he's saying was open was like all the way on the left side of the field. And if Carr throws that ball, I don't know if you ever played Stratomatic, you know, where you roll the dice for the outcome and it's like kind of probabilistic on the results of the play, there is like an 80% chance that that's a 99-yard pick six.
And you explained this to this man.
Yeah.
He just didn't want it. He just wanted
to
want
to hear it.
He did not want to hear it. Like the mechanics and how that works. And like when you roll out that way, you can't throw across your body that far. And why do it? Why do it when you're already in field goal range? You know, it's fourth quarter. Like that. Carr made the right play or whatever, you know, by not doing that.
Right.
That man. Yeah, and I'm not a Carr defender, but yeah. It's you tried to explain it to this man, but he did not want it. He kept turning around.
Begging me to agree with him. We got a 17-point lead, and that's when they had the bad snap, you know?
Yeah.
So it's third down. Either the center or Ridder was not in sync. He hiked it to Ridder, who wasn't ready for it, and it just bounced right past him. And Peyton Turner with a fumble recovery. Welcome back to football, Peyton Turner. Man,
good to have him back.
And then we had the, you know, second touchdown to A.T. Perry. Boom, boom. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. That was a good catch, too.
Now it's 41-17. And as we all know, that was the last of the scoring.
Yeah, we just did victory formation from that point out.
victory formation for the last 9 minutes of the game, and everyone left happy.
Yeah, no controversy.
Nobody scored for the next 8 minutes until the backup quarterback, a guy who I've never heard of, some not bad numbers, 3 completions in 4 attempts for 27 yards.
Yeah.
But his longest pass of the day.
was the one that wasn't complete. Yeah.
It was the one that wasn't complete. Was a 74-yard interception return by Tyrann Mathieu, who got dragged down from behind at the 1-yard line, which, when you think about it, makes the next thing that happened entirely the fault of the Atlanta offense.
They brought it on themselves. They brought it on themselves.
They could have simply let Tyrann Mathieu into the end zone.
Yeah.
But they did not. And what ended up happening instead, Jameis Winston overruling the not at all respected Dennis Allen and deciding to hand the ball off to 2022-23 touchdown leader Jamal Williams to get his first touchdown of the season. And so out of the victory formation, Williams runs, you know, like a 1-yard plunge to the dismay of Arthur Smith. We make the final score 48-17 after the Falcons do not kneel out the clock either. They instead decided that if we're going to make the playoffs, we might have 3 more plays to potentially get someone injured.
Yeah.
By running twice and throwing one complete pass.
I respect it. You know, good for them. I'm glad they did. Like that was cool. Go ahead.
Didn't go down quiet at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
So there you go. You know, just an incredible second half. I can't ask for anything more than what happened in that game.
That was the best. I think that was the best game they played all year to me, or at least the funnest I had watching the game. And
yeah,
I'm glad we got to go to it.
They had some really, really good games. They had a really what they did to New England was unholy. And there were like some other, you know, very well played games last week against Tampa. You know, you could feel that it bubbling up, and Tampa beat Carolina 9-0.
Yeah, we were checking the score, or trying not to check the score, but couldn't help it, like, throughout this game, you know. It was like 9-0 forever, or 6-0 forever, and then finally, you know, it just kind of looked like... And then the lady behind us, the lady sitting behind us was like, "It's over, child, it's done. Atlanta won the division," you know, and it kind of told everybody
Tampa
the second and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Tampa won a division. Yeah. And like, all right, so like, let's get that out of our head. We'll worry about the next two games in the afternoon.
Yeah. Silent second of hate for DJ Chark for fumbling through the end zone at the 1 yard line.
Yeah. And a missed field goal. So technically, that could have been a 10-9 win for Carolina had they played it. Well, maybe not. I mean, you never know how that goes, but it does leave a lot like, oh, we weren't, maybe it wasn't that. You know, maybe it was closer than you think.
All right, everybody. It is now 41-17, about halfway through the fourth quarter. Guy I've been sitting next to all game and high-fiving is Lewis from Gretna. How are you feeling about the game, my man?
And I'm feeling so great. You got to understand one thing and one thing only, baby. We bleed black and gold, you hear me? Yeah.
That's it. Who that, baby?
Who that, baby?
Man, the walk out of that stadium, you know, you guys talk about the ramps at the Dome, and we just had people randomly stopping us to talk about how great it was with like just a little bit of bitterness about how we must have looked so happy and approachable.
Yeah, that's got to be it. They're like, hey, these two guys want to hear our opinions. It's not like we were like wearing shirts that said, "We're a podcast, ask us anything."
Right.
Or, you know, it's like people was literally, like, I had my Deuce McAllister jersey on. Charles had the Kamara jersey on. Like, we weren't advertising. We would just look like regular Saints fans. And, yeah, like, this big guy comes up to us. And he was
like, talking about how, like, the missed opportunities. Like, if we had played like this at the beginning of the year, we would have run away with the division.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe we'll do, like, another episode as a season recap. And so won't get into it deeply here. But there are, like, distinct individual plays that change the outcome of this season. And of course, there are a million of them in a butterfly flapping its wings kind of way. But there are like two, maybe more, but I can think off the top of my head of literally two last second plays that went wrong that if either of them flip, we're playing next week. You know, the immediately come to mind is Groupie missing the field goal at Green Bay. And Foster, and you know, whether you want to blame David Carr for overthrowing Foster Moreau or Foster Moreau for letting it bounce off of his hands, that wins the game too.
Yeah. That's we got an 11 win team if those things go right. You know, and those are two gimmies.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think history would definitely remember us as the worst 11 win team.
He probably deservedly so. Yeah.
But who cares? You know, like the stat people don't love our Super Bowl team. They would bitch and moan about us at 13-0 and talk about all these advanced stats, and then you shove them in the locker and say, "Shut the fuck up."
Yeah.
The other side of that hyphen is a zero.
Yeah.
It could have been, man. It really, all the things that could have been. Anyway, that's for another week, but. But we left this game, I think it's safe to say, on a real high.
Yeah. And then it got better. Like, we went hang out with more Saints fans, you know, in the city. You know, just kept the vibe going. Got that magic going.
Just walking back to the car where we were going to, you know, go to a bar to meet our various men in the Dome. We were meeting up with Chris again and Skooks. And his wife, who I got to meet, lovely woman, Chris.
Yeah.
And my friend Neil, who was a man in the Dome for the Jaguars game. We all met them at Half Moon, for the people who do know New Orleans, to watch the late games and cross our fingers for the wild card. And just on the walk there, you know, we're talking to different people who hear, you know, the teams we need to win and who they need to beat. And, you know, the guy's like, oh, I don't know about that, you know, because all, you know, all the teams who are in the running or eliminated kind of semi-stink. So no one wants to count on Chicago or Arizona, but I don't know how you could particularly have faith in Green Bay or Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, he's being a little bit doomer, and I'm just like, nope. I may be depressed in 3 hours, but I'm not spending 3 hours being negative, right?
Yeah.
Whatever happens, but I'm going into this optimistic, thinking about Green Bay and Seattle's flaws, not Arizona and Chicago's flaws.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everyone, because, like, everyone's, like, packed walking down Poydras again, and everyone's like, that's right, that's the attitude we're taking in.
That's
and,
what we're doing.
I mean, do you know what kind of weird world we're living in when I am the beacon of light?
The optimist
shining his happy, projecting his happy thoughts out in the world. I'm the one who's going to make the secret real.
Yeah, that, well, that is the magic of the dome. That is the magic of being inside of there. That is the magic of being the solidarity of being amongst the Who Dat Nation in that hallowed place of worship. You know, that is what comes from. You have faith, you know, like that's what comes with it, you know. It's impossible to fight. It really is hard to fight. And it's like, it rubbed off so good, because, like, I remember, like, even when we was passing one of the parking lots where the Atlanta people were tailgating, and, like, they weren't down there outside barbecue. I had the music blaring. They were partying. Like, the even Atlanta fans was having fun. It's like, man, they didn't even mind. Like, they came here to party, and they was going to do it no matter what. And I respect, that's why I love them. Like, they wasn't mad. They wasn't talking. Like, it was just like, all right, well, that happened. Let's just enjoy this day, you know, because it was a nice day. It was like beautiful weather. It was kind of cold, but it was sunny, you know, felt good.
I mean, cold fixture from New Orleans. It was like perfect fall weather for me. I loved it. Sunday was great. And yeah, the Atlanta theme is like some, I don't know who it's by. I don't know, you know, if it's a popular song that I'm just too old to be familiar with, or if it's like a local group in Georgia or whatever. But before the game, everyone was like singing this thing. It's like, we ready.
Yeah. Yeah. That's their song.
We ready. Whatever. And like, they're getting hyped just like we're getting hyped. Yeah. They're in town to have a good time and, you know, ruin our season. And actually, they weren't eliminated. If they win and Carolina wins, they win the three-way tiebreaker at 8-9. Yeah. And then after the game, going to the casino where we got our rip-off slots comps, you know, like everyone in the dome got a $20 slot comp at Harrah's, and then we get there and they're like, our system is down. And I'm like, you're bullshitting me.
Look how convenient. That was just free. That was free advertising for them.
Yeah, but they didn't get us, except for the fact that we had to pay for parking. But while we're walking in, there's a group of Atlanta fans. After the game, they've just gotten their doors blown off.
Yeah.
And she's like, we still ready.
Ready.
We still ready. And I was like, you know what? That is, you know, if you're going to take positive energy into 2024, that woman, after losing, having all of her spirit, like, afterwards, just cracking up with a bunch of Saints fans. No bitterness. Nobody was being rude to her. Everyone was like, this is what a rivalry should...
Yeah.
You hate each other, but you still are not, you know, throwing hands.
Yeah. You respect each other. And it's fun. It's like, this is a game. This is all. We all got each other, ultimately. Like, we all in each other's hands, you know, in the city and through it. And we're enjoying, we're enjoying each other's essences. You know, how... And, yeah, that's I won't forget her, you know. We still ready, even after they got stomped.
Then we head over to the bar. We only half watched the games, you know.
Yeah.
I think we were all maybe a little maxed out on, like, actual football attention.
Yeah.
The football games were on in the background, but they were like whale sounds or ASMR or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I would glance up every 5-10 minutes and be like, ah, score ain't changed. All right,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. And like, it was always going just barely poorly. You know? Green Bay was always a little ahead. Seattle, you know, was a little more back and forth, but it felt like they were always like on the fringe. That, you know, Arizona wasn't really going to do it. And you know what? It did not dampen our spirits.
Yep.
We just kept rolling.
Yeah.
We met a guy at the bar who I guess had been talking to Neil while he waited for us. And he's like, oh, you're from New York. I'm from Staten Island. And I'm like, all right, let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
He's like, and I was a cop. And I'm like, I don't know that I want to keep talking.
But he had a cool Saints like outfit. I was like, well,
yeah, he was fully, he was dressed to the nines in Saints gear. You know, he's a, you know, he'd been here for a while and he just decided to go all in, I guess. And he was garrulous, but also when we walked away, he did not follow us to the table.
Good. Good.
So,
yeah.
So that was fine.
Good. Yeah.
You know, and then Chris, Skooks' wife, recruited someone to our table who was awesome.
Yeah.
And as the games kind of went south and it became clear that we weren't going to make it, you know, I got Lindsay to talk to us for a bit on her thoughts for the season. So I'm just going to stick that in here. So shout out to Lindsay from Irish Channel.
All right. So I'm here with Lindsay from Irish Channel here in New Orleans. We are in the waning minutes of a very depressing Packers-Bears game. Yeah, they got to fumble the kneel down here. So our season just ended.
Jesus.
But I gotta ask Lindsay to give your take on this. We've now missed the playoffs, but you are taking the long view here. What do you want to get out of Green Bay winning this game?
All right, so short of having a sort of like fan override of Pete Carmichael and Dennis Allen's calls, where you could, for maybe like AWS could make an app where you could veto not putting Taysom in the red zone. You could veto like a Kendre Miller run on third and long for 1 yard. Like, I think Kendre Miller is great, but like, you could veto the sort of plays that you're seeing out there. You could veto not going for it. Short of that, I think you've got to have a shakeup in coaching staff. And I don't see that happening if the Saints made the playoffs. I think it would be a good excuse to keep things where they are, try to draft better, when I think there's some problems upstairs that we're not using our talent the way they could be used.
I think that's fair.
That's totally true.
I think that is true. I can't, under any circumstances, hope that we don't make the playoffs. I would rather make the playoffs and put a hit out on Pete Carmichael.
Yeah.
Does that seem like can we negotiate that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because your situation involves relying on Jeff Bezos, and I'm not sure that that's much better than me ordering a murder.
That's utopian thought here. No, we should always do utopian thought.
It's just one, like, democratic way I think we could override the horrific play calling where every single person is sitting on their couch going, why would you call that play?
That's
like,
right.
Why are you not doing
it
that?
Is.
Why are you running on third and long? Like, that play should have been run on second down, first down. I can't get
it. No, that's right. We definitely could hire someone to make a more ethical app than AWS.
We should democratize the play calling.
I think that's
we
right.
We should do that. I would even say an AI.
What?
I don't know.
No. What? Wait.
You don't want to take out of human hands.
That's more radical than my suggestion for democracy.
By the way, you know, Scoots.
Football coach should be an elected office.
Yes.
So we should just.
Heck yeah.
The public resources go into funding so much of what this team's revenue is in the first place.
Exactly. We own this.
The Superdome is our building. It's the people's house. We ought to have some kind of a voice in who is calling the plays and coaching.
I just want to say you have more faith in Louisiana democracy than I do. If you limit it to the city, then I think that's reasonable. If you make it statewide, we have a coach in a diaper.
David Bitter. Coach David Bitter.
We always reserve the right to stage a January 6th whenever we feel like the play.
We should storm
it's
the
called
Superdome.
A February night. Okay. But what if you couldn't actively change the current play? What if you had fans engaged throughout the game, and then every time that Pete Carmichael defied the most obvious situation by 90%, he got a pay cut.
I love where you're going with that. Yeah, his money, you saw his money drop down in real time. Why did you run that? Maybe he even throws into a dunk tank with piranhas.
Yeah. I like the dunk tank idea
because
I want to see people on the call plays from a dunk tank.
I think they should put the kind of shock collar on him that you're not allowed to use to train dogs.
That's good. No, we need Pete in a shock collar.
All of fandom just said no. That makes no sense.
That's it. And we have one of those invisible fences that keep him out of the locker room.
I don't know how much negative reinforcement works, but I'm still...
It doesn't really work.
No.
But I'm still farthest in this one specific...
I'm not sure what else could possibly make it happen. I don't know, other than firing, obviously, which is my number one.
All right. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
You know, that's the season. It was a good, weird season.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd have enjoyed the season as much. I'm going to be honest, a little sincere, no crying, without this podcast. This podcast was so much fun and so much value added, Ron. Same. I really thank you for saying yes when I proposed this silly thing.
And I want to thank you too. You do all the hard work. And a lot, 95% of the grunt work, what goes into making it happen. And I want to thank you too, because I don't think I have the technological expertise, or even the communication gravitas to do something like this without you. So I don't talk a lot in front of public or anything like that. And thanks for having me be a part of it. And the same thing, if we don't do this podcast, I'm probably just I'm checked out by halfway the season. And I might even have missed a couple of games. Because I would have been so angry at Dennis Allen, just for the man that he is, and Derek Carr. But having to process it through this podcast, you kind of work through some things, and you can kind of you're a little more invested, but you're also more rewarded, and it's all worth it for that last week. I had so much fun. Thank you for coming down.
Get to watch the team. Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was such a great weekend. Also, shout out to Anna, who I stayed with after the game on Sunday. Met her family, who's an old friend of mine because we used to work together in New York, but she's been back in New Orleans where she grew up for a long time. The whole weekend sort of clicked, and the season clicked because we really did get to see them grow as a team. We probably were a little hard on them after they kind of shit the bed against the Rams, because the Rams are actually a quality team with a great Hall of Fame quarterback. We watched this offensive line go through a bunch of injuries, a bunch of just finding guys who were supposed to be, rotation guys like Hurst, or practice squad guys like Landon Young and Cam Irving, just play, and Max Garcia, all these guys rotate in, and the team got so much better as they found their sea legs. The offense diversified a little. We had injuries for Shaheed and Thomas and Kamara and Kendre Miller almost the whole year. And through it all, everyone sort of came back, and they were peaking at the end. Brzee, who I was worried about for a few weeks, became a monster by the end, like a really clear hit
in, you know, the drafting, in a draft that may, you know, I mean, we had really good low-round guys. Howden and A.T. Perry really are standouts, I think. But you know, we had Foskey barely played, second-round guy. Miller was hurt all year, so I was worried, but now I feel great about him after this one game, which is probably overdoing it, but it's true. And Nick Salvadori was another, I think, offensive lineman who I think was maybe active once. I have to look it up, you know. So it's like, that's not, you know, those middle rounds were kind of salvaged by our late round guys. I don't know. But a lot of people are worried that it's going to fall apart next year. And
it could because of Dennis Allen.
Right. Know? But I don't feel that way. I think our division is still going to stink, like really stink. And hopefully next year can be the year that we kind of rise above it. Yeah. Like with guys like Howden and Yadam and Adebo all stepping up, with Lattimore and May both hurt almost the whole year. And I don't think Lattimore's coming back. They're already talking about, like, apparently he and Dennis Allen are friction, which is bad news for Dennis Allen. But they're already talking about sign and trade for him. But we had a really good defensive backfield with him not playing for half a season, which I would not have predicted. And so, I don't know. I've decided once again, foolhardy, playing against type, to, like, you know, hope for the best in the off season and think about it optimistically. You know,
that's it. I want to be there. I am definitely there with our team, 100%.
Yeah,
like, we got the guys. You know, and like I love the way they played for each other. I like the way they make decisions as a collective group. That was even apart from Dennis Allen. Like, you know, with the kneel down. I know the media has probably covered that too much, but like, I liked that they made a collective decision. And like, they're the guys, they're the workers. Like, and they called it. You know, whatever you want to say about it, like, that was their decision as a team. And I like that they can operate like that. You would like to see the coaching on the same page as them.
Yeah.
But that, we don't have a coach that can do that, because I don't think our coach can do that. Like, he can't build like a healthy locker room, like, or culture. He can't organize his own workers to be on the same page, because he sees them as something to be like controlled and manipulated, instead of like human beings with strengths that need to be highlighted, weaknesses that need to be, like, you know, like improved upon. And like, and sure, he's just not a leader, you know. Like, so when they win, they don't really win together, and when they lose, they don't lose together, because they're like, use the media to go back and forth, you know, with each other. And that's like, that's not what a leader does. That's not what a leader should do. So I think that's like that's again, I said it like at episode one of our podcast, like, he's the weakest link is coaching, you know. And at the end of it, that's still the weakest link.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's funny, I'm like, I started saying the good, you know, the sign-offs and goodbyes, which I'm gonna have to sort of edit around, because this was a topic. This is a topic I really wanted to get into, and we didn't. The players, after the Winston thing, and after all the media went to their fainting couches about what a disastrous display of, you know, unsportsmanlike behavior, so déclassé, my word, Monocle flying off and injuring a bystander. All of the players were like, our call, our decision. Whatever my problems with Jameis Winston are from afar, because I think he is probably in many ways a genuinely bad person. He is clearly a teammate, you know, for the guys in the trenches. They don't have the same, you know, 1,000-yard view that I do. They like him. They respect him. They consider him a leader and a friend. And they, to a man on that team, with the maybe exception of, unsurprisingly, Derek Carr, who weasel-worded it, all of the other guys were like, great guy, we made this decision collectively, and anyone can say whatever they want, which continues a pattern of the players kind of back and forthing with Dennis Allen through social media, him kind of sniping about players' injury recovery times, his not taking accountability and putting it all on execution when there were clear, horrible decisions being made about how the offense was being run. It was always someone else. There was always a person to blame. And that came to a head for me. Amy Trask has a podcast with a person whose name I will plug in here in a very awkward way, but I don't remember it. Pause for name. The podcast is called What the Football, and it's two women like talking about the game at a very high level. Amy Trask was a longtime executive with the Raiders in their various cities, very high ranking, incredibly respected, one of the most respected executives in football who has shifted to a media career. And she said she worked one season with Dennis Allen, and she is not surprised at all at the very obvious schism and potential lack of respect, for lack of a better word, that the players have for him, the fractious relationship. And she gave an example of his first day after hiring. He called an all-staff meeting. You know, he asked the team to get everyone in, and Trask thought this was great. You know, he's going to speak to the whole team, from like the ticketing people to the budgeting people to media relations, advertising. The entire staff gets together in an auditorium to listen to Dennis Allen, and everyone, I think, is excited to, you know, meet the new guy and expecting him to say something inspirational. And she makes it sound like it was just a litany of insults. Like, you know, we're going to shape this crap up kind of speech, you know. And all these people are like, you know, we work our asses off. We do our jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're a new coach, but who the fuck do you think you are? Like, it was just weird. Yeah. And she makes it sound like that relationship extended to the players. That there are guys you will run through a wall for, and they don't have to all be nice. Belichick has no reputation for being nice. But he's respected, and people will do anything for him. And you can compare him, Steph Stradley, when she was on for the Texans. That's the environment in Houston, right? They will do anything for D'Amico Ryans. They will go above and beyond, and DA doesn't have that here. And one of the things Trask said was, I thought that I gave him the benefit of the doubt that the years between his head coaching stints would have taught him something, because he's still a respected X's and O's guy. I would have thought that he would have learned to be a leader in the interim, and he is the same guy who neither gives nor gets respect from the people he needs it from the most. And so, yes, that gives me pause for next year. If, you know, like, if that doesn't straighten itself out, if the culture warps around the specific weird-ass gravity of Dennis Allen, it will not be for the benefit of the team, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can be, like you said about Belichick, like, he can be controlling and kind of domineering, but, like, there's this, he'll still put together like, well, there's a fairness to it. Like, these are the rules. Just stay within this and it's going to be all right. But like with Dennis Allen, he plays favorites, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like the opposite. Like, they won't run through a wall, you know, for Dennis Allen. They want to throw Dennis Allen through the wall, you know, like, because he's a duplicitous moron in a lot of ways. It's like, you know, the guys aren't dumb. They see through that. They see the way he like sucks up to power and like, and how he views them in relationship, you know, to his own power. And like, he doesn't, those guys aren't dumb in the locker room. They've played under a bunch of other coaches, right. So they know what a good coach is. So like, he can't fool them, you know. And like, I think the problem is a little deeper now, because like, it's fundamentally at Gail Benson's, you know, like, it's her decision, unfortunately. And like she just bought a bunch more car dealerships, by the way. So congrats.
Yeah, congrats to her.
Multi billion. Yeah, like, but it's clear she hasn't like walked amongst the people lately, you know? Because like if she did, like if she was in that building the way we were, she would be like, yeah, this coach isn't. You know, there's a vibe to this city. There's like a soul and a beat, and like there's a sound to the heart of it. And like he's just like a, you know, like a fingers on a chalkboard. Yeah. Like he's messing it up. Like he's incoherent with what we have.
Yeah, I mean, we made a lot of jokes early in the year about how the Derek Carr, Chris Olave relationship was essentially racial. by repeatedly imputing that Carr was a racist, which, I mean, to be fair, I don't want to get sued over, but it is a very good bit that we will keep doing. And, but I don't know, like, with Allen, I don't know that it's racial, but I don't know that it's not. You know, the people,
especially if you bring it in Gruden, who already has a history of saying some racist, homophobic, like, you know, bigoted shit. Like you bring it in a bigot, I used to work at a place where like the main manager were like, right, I wouldn't say he was a racist. He never did it. But I know he hired a gigantic racist and put a racist in power, knowing that guy was a giant racist. You know, so like, you might not be a race, but you're okay with it. So to a degree, systemically, you're enabling it. You
right.
Know, like, can you imagine if like that same dynamic happens with Olave and Carr, and there might be some weird racial stuff, and you got Gruden in the background chirping in? Like, come on.
Right.
Like, that's going to...
Right.
And in New Orleans?
That's who he had.
Right, yeah.
He didn't have any tension with Carr all year. When Carr was having tension with anyone else, he always supported Carr. Yeah. And...
Yeah,
you know, Carr's his guy, going back to the Raiders, blah, 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 maybe, maybe,
yeah, maybe,
you know, but man.
But why'd they get along back then? So, you know, that could still be the same.
But I just mean it doesn't look great that he goes into this team with this culture, with these leaders, and the guys who he's always crosswise with are not Derek Carr. And... You know, I'm not saying, but I'm saying. And so if anything worries me about next year, that's it, you know, in terms of Dennis Allen. But next week, I don't want to talk about Dennis Allen. Next week's season wrap-up.
No Dennis
Allen. Next week's season wrap-up episode. We're going to end up talking about him anyway. But I want it to be. But I want to kind of just do the year in review without having 18 weeks of fuck Dennis Allen. Because just know that it's in our hearts. It's the underline on every sentence.
It's deep. Yeah. It's there. It's the subtext.
That's the watermark on every page, is that we're thinking that this may be a mistake. All right. So with that, I just want to, you know, say thanks to all of our men in the Dome, to Chris, to Skooks, to Neil. I want to thank everyone who listened. I want to thank Dan Parshall and Lunar Snow, our two sound guys who turn the work around fast, and I really appreciate what you do. I want to thank our hands, which are perfect horns, and I want to thank Ron for doing this season with me, and I for one. Am ready to do it again, to run it back next year.
Same. Looking forward to it. And thank you.
All right. You know what that means. Won the battle, lost the war, but I still think we go out with the happy horns.
Happy horns. It gotta be. Gotta be.
All right.
You ready?
Three, two, one. Boom, 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 boom. Who dat?